Hey, Whiskeys, it's your girl, Erica Altus, and I've got the inside scoop on something that'll make your wine-loving heart skip a beat. Drumroll, please. It's the Whiskey and Lace Wine Club, the brainchild of yours truly in partnership with your wine store. Now, I may have grown up surrounded by the vineyard charm of Sonoma County, but let me tell you, the wine club game was missing a dash of pizzazz. So I took matters into my own hands and created the Whiskey and Lace Wine Club. Imagine this. A selection of top-rated wines handpicked just for you, straight from the lush vineyards of California, Oregon, and beyond. My goal? To make you feel like you've got a wine expert BFF guiding you through the vineyard wonders. Whether you're a seasoned sipper or just starting your grape adventure, the Whiskey and Lace Wine Club is where the magic happens. And here's the cherry on top. 4 shipments a year, access to over 40 wineries and a whopping 200 wines, not to mention a delightful 20% off all wine, all day, every day. Ready to dive deep into this wine wonderland with me? Hop over to yourwinestore.com/whiskeyandlace, become a Whiskey and Lace Wine Club member, and let's turn every sip into a memory. Cheers. Are you someone who doesn't take life too seriously? Do you sometimes find that a shot of whiskey isn't only deserved, but needed? If you said yes to either of those, welcome to the Whiskey and Lace podcast, where we have honest chats with everyday people, shit shows and all. I'm your host, Erica Altus, and I'm here to empower you to be the best version of yourself and perhaps share in a shot of whiskey. Now pour yourself a glass of wine and let's go. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Whiskey and Lace podcast. Today's guest is a special one. This person is notorious for wearing Dickies, is the most selfless human I know, has a heart of gold and the patience of a saint. She's worked for hospice and has literally sat next to strangers as they take their last breath. She's the mother of 6 children and 16 grandchildren who call her Mama Allie. The most present grandmother. She will always be there when you need her. No questions asked. Comes to my house and asks to fold laundry. So when I say I won the lottery in the mom department, I am not lying. Everyone, welcome my mom, Alice, to the podcast. Hi, Mom.
Hi, dear.
Oh, are you crying already? Holy shit, Mom. It's like really early on.
Well, I don't usually hear that.
Oh.
You know, I mean, I never think of it that way, you know,
oh,
but thank
well, you
for
are
those
all
words.
Those things and more. You really are. And before we begin, a lot of people want to know why I call you Alice or how you feel about me calling you Alice.
It doesn't bother me. It was one of those things that actually most people know me as Allie since way after when we got married, Mel and I just kind of changed it to Allie. So the ones that know me as Alice are my family, those that are older.
Because your mom called you Alice.
Yes, my name was Alice growing up. My friend Margaret that lived across the street, my longtime friend, we're both Margaret and Alice, but to her friends, and other than me, as friends, she's Maggie, and I'm Allie, but to each other, we're Margaret and Alice.
They're a really cute duo, you guys. Someday I need to podcast both of you at the same time, because I think it'd be very entertaining. I've always said this, I don't always call them by their first names, but with names like Melvin and Alice, and their names really fit their character. And so I don't know. I've always said it. And I love your names. I actually like, if I had like a third daughter or second daughter, but a third child, I probably would have wanted to name them Alice. If it was a daughter. I don't know if Mark would have gone for it because it is a unique name, but I love it. I just think it's the cutest name. But also people want to know before we get really into it is, they wondered how you feel about mine and most of my siblings, quote, potty mouths. Does that offend you, especially as someone who doesn't really have a potty mouth herself?
Well, it's interesting that you asked me that question because I think back when you were all growing up, we didn't have the internet and we didn't have social media. So you may have been using that language when I wasn't around, but it definitely wasn't used in the house as casually as I hear it nowadays. Especially, but listening to you and your siblings in within your adults, and I go, you know what? It's their mouth, not mine. And, you know, I kind of just let it go, you know?
And tell me if I'm wrong, but we don't really use it at one another unless we're joking.
Right.
Like, we don't use it in a way that's, like, offensive. It's more so what I like to call sentence enhancers.
That's what you call it. But it's all, and it's like I'm picking my battles, if you want to say, when you have six children and 16 grandkids and in-laws and stuff. There's, how do I want to say it? That's very minute to other things that you just choose to do or listen to or take offense from. I don't take it offended, you know.
Yeah, you're not offended. We're not like using it at you or towards one another.
No, absolutely not.
Oh, okay. Well, Let's get into your childhood, your life. Where'd you grow up? Tell us about your siblings. Tell us about your parents. We just want to get a little background on who you are and where you came from.
Well, I'm a native of Alameda, California. I was born and raised in my home on San Jose Avenue. I was born in my house.
I didn't know you were born at home.
Yeah.
Way to go, Grandma.
I know.
Why did I not know
that
about you?
She was ready for it. My mom was a registered nurse, too. And we lived right around the corner from Alameda Hospital and where the doctor's medical office was there. And I was named after my doctor, Dr. Alice Challen.
Yeah. And where were you in the lineup? Because you have a lot of siblings.
I'm the youngest of seven. I had a sister that passed away before I was born.
She was number
three.
Oh, she was number three. Why did I think she was the child right before you?
Oh, no, because after she died, she was like three years old from what I remember. I have a beautiful picture. Her name was Nancy Lee, and she died from spinal meningitis. Back then, they didn't have the medicine and the antibiotics and so forth. So that was a sudden thing for my family, but we didn't really talk about it by the time I came along. But I do know that my sister's the oldest, Barbara, and we're 17 years apart. So it's like growing up, I pretty much lived in a different, time period than what it was for when she was growing up. But I know her telling me in years past that I'm so glad mom had you, because after my sister passed away, my mom had three more boys. And my sister said, I think she was going to keep going until she had another girl, you know.
And along came Alice.
And then along came Alice. So my parents, through my life growing up, was different than what they had it. I guess we were poor back in the day in that, but not for me. It was when
your grandma, because Grandma Jarrett grew up in like during the Great Depression era.
Right. And before I was born, it was World War II, and she would take in children, babies for the ladies that worked in the shipyards at the Navy base.
Oh, wow. It's like an at-home daycare?
Oh, yeah. There was cribs there. And I barely remember that story of it, but my sisters and my brothers do. And my dad was a carpenter at trade. But by the time I came along, my dad wasn't always in best of health. So it was a different generation.
He struggled with like depression and mental health issues, right?
Yes, he did. And a lot of that, I think, it wasn't diagnosed back then.
Yeah, but he also lost a child. I mean, I feel like, you know, how can you not be somewhat depressed and somewhat sad and somewhat, you know, like, I mean, you know, friends that have lost children, very close friends, and I admire how they are so able to be positive after losing not just one child, but two. But I mean, I kind of would give grace to grandpa and grandma if they struggled with, you know, mental health issues after losing a child, because I can't imagine that.
Well, I think for my mom, it was probably a little different. My dad had no faith, but he agreed when they got married that they would raise their children Catholic. So he allowed us to go. They paid for Catholic education, which was right around the corner from us, the school that I went to. And my mom had her faith, and she was an RN, and she understood about life and death a little bit more than my dad. And I know that
she like gave it to God.
Yes, she did. She lived her faith. And then when I was 17, my dad became Catholic, and actually my friend Margaret's parents were his godparents.
Oh,
so it's kind of interesting. Yeah.
Tell us the unique thing about yours and Margaret's relationship. What did you do growing up that most would not do and would probably find like dangerous, if you will?
Oh dear. Let's see.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Well, we used to go.
What are you? You're not just friends. What else are you?
Oh, we're blood sisters. Yes.
You guys, they pricked their fingers.
With a razor blade.
With a razor blade and then like blended it together.
So we are blood sisters. Yep. We're blood sisters.
I don't advise anybody doing this anymore.
Yep. That's so funny.
But no, their friendship is really cute. She lived across the street from them and she's actually my godmother. So you grew up in Alameda and you lived on San Jose Avenue, and then you ended up, you know, meeting dad at some point during this, right?
Right after high school, we both met at the rec department that summer.
Yeah.
And I think we heard that story.
Yeah, we heard
from
that
dad.
Story. If you want that whole story, you can go back to Melvin's episode. But did you like growing up in Alameda?
Oh, I loved it. I loved it for a lot of the reasons. Back in the 50s, it was safe. It was like you can take your bike and you can go ride anywhere. In fact, I did go through the tube in Alameda from Webster Street to Oakland with some of my friends, some of the girls. And it was like, I think we were like maybe 10 and 11 years old.
Oh my gosh, like Austin's age.
Right, right. Oh, wow. We took off on our bikes and we wouldn't obviously do that today. But
yeah,
I would go to the playgrounds, the park, Franklin Park. I grew up at Franklin Park. Mel was a Lincoln Lion and I was a Franklin Eagle. I think that's what it was. We were all named different ones. But anyway, it wasn't too far away. And I would pack my lunch. And at the end of the day, I'd go home when the park directors left and I would ride my bike home. And in between there, it was like a whole neighborhood. And there were my friends that went to school, all lived on the blocks near us, Grand Street, San Jose Avenue, San Antonio. So we would stop by different friends' houses too and that kind of thing.
And correct me if I'm wrong, because I feel like I've gotten this story wrong before. But were you hit by a car?
I was on my bike.
How old were you?
Probably about 10 or 11. And the first thing I thought about, because that was in the summer, I had gotten my bike at Christmas. And when I realized that I was hit, my biggest fear was my mom and dad were going to be mad because my bike was broke.
Oh.
But it ended up that it was the man that hit me was making a left-hand turn and I was coming across in the crosswalk, but I was on my bike and it was on the Encinal and Walnut, and he turned and he had his one eye patched.
Oh my gosh.
So, but then somebody there, I think I passed out for maybe a second or so. Mm-hmm. I end up with a concussion. So it wasn't like he was speeding. He had stopped and he turned and he didn't see me, but I did have a concussion. And of course I went around the corner. My mom took me to my doctor that lived around the corner from us, and she gave me the okay, and I was okay. Yeah, but
it was not weird. Everybody can say that they've been hit by a car, Alice. That's like kind of unique. All right. So, you know, you have all these siblings and you grew up, and since we're on the topic of grandma, for those of you guys that don't know, because I don't think I've shared this on my stories before, but my grandma Jarrett, my mom's mom, lived with us in our household for 16 years,
mm-hmm.
16 years. And man, you know, having your grandma live with you like through your, because how old was I when she moved in? I was in like third grade, right? Like I was Austin's age.
You were even,
second grade?
See, Matt was six.
Okay, so I was eight. So yeah, I was, yeah.
Yeah, you were both young.
So she lived there through my high school years, which thank God for my parents, because had she not lived there, I can't say that I probably wouldn't have thrown a party or anything like that. We had technical difficulties and a delivery. Weird. Anyways, we had Grandma Jarrett living with us for 16 years, which was so incredible to have somebody older in the household like that. I feel like it really teaches you as a kid how to respect elderly people and appreciate them, and that we did. So what was it like though, having, because I can't imagine having you live with us, you know, like during those years, it'd be like you living with us now. Because how old was she when she moved in? She wasn't like your age. She was older than that.
My mom and dad moved up to Santa Rosa from from Castro Valley after your dad and I moved up here, and it was just Scotia and Billy. And they decided to move up here. And my dad was not working at that time anyway. My mom was retiring from being a nurse, but then she decided to work at Summerfield Convalescent Hospital, which was like not even a mile away from our house. And what she liked to do was she worked on the weekends, because that's when the doctors were not around and there wasn't the physical therapy. It was families coming in to visit, and she was the RN, and she had so for the LVNs there to take care of a lot of the different things. So she and my dad lived in a motorhome off of Santa Rosa Avenue. And
with their dog, Heidi, their first dog named Heidi.
Heidi, yeah. She had two dogs named Heidi. But anyway, what was awesome that they were up here was then your siblings, you came along and so forth. She really was hands-on then. And that's, I think, her example of being a hands-on grandma and enjoying it. She made a lot of the clothes that your siblings
wore. A lot of Halloween costumes.
She liked doing that. She loved to cook. She loved to garden and so forth. So she lived up there from the time she was 65 to 80 when my father passed away. And that was then. She was still working as an RN at Convalescent Hospital.
How many years was she a nurse for?
65 years.
You guys, 65 years.
Part time at the end.
Yeah, but still, like when she was working at the convalescent home at the end, there was a lot of patients that were younger than her that she was nursing. And it just was, I mean, it's such an example to set for your family members for sure.
Well, she always had a purpose, you know, and that was important too for her. That was important for her, but family was always important to her. And I think that's where it came for me as well. But thank God we had grandma. She helped out in many ways, watching you kids and so forth. Then when she moved in with us, like you said,
this was after grandpa passed away.
And we decided that, and it worked out well. And your dad was, you know, very much open to that. And our house being, as it got remodeled and so forth, we had room for her. Of course, you kids had to share rooms at times, but I don't think the two girls did much.
No, because we were so far apart in age, Tasha and I.
Right.
But the boys all did.
They did.
I shared a room with Matt for a little while, but that was when we were younger.
Yes. Anyway, she was a blessing to have because she did the gardening around the house. She helped with the laundry. And having her there, I was able then to go and volunteer and work at school too, at the school. And I did that quite a bit. Then I was hired on at the school, first with the lunch program.
Yeah.
And then with the extended daycare program, which was really neat. And then it was took a village to raise you guys. It really did. And that
Were six of us.
Yes. But the thing is that's what made it work was having the extra hands-on from different people that would take you to school or bring you home if I had to work and so forth.
Yeah. And you even like, as if you didn't have enough children, there was a time too where my mom would have other people's kids come over and she would watch them at our house. Remember like the Fitchie's daughters and stuff?
Right. And also the principal back then, I can't remember her name, Pillard.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Mrs. Pillar.
Yeah.
She was the principal at Montgomery High School.
At one time. Her too. Kate. Yes.
Nicole
and Kevin.
Yes.
Yes, they did. Well,
so like
helped.
She didn't have enough kids. She had so many children, but she, you know, you wanted to, what I was gathering from the journals that you gave me to read was that there was some times when you guys were financially struggling and you would be praying, you know, to help make ends meet. So
that
you
was
always,
one of
I
them.
Admire that you always like, you know, grabbed extra children to bring into your home because you really excel with children. And you even took a shift at Safeway in the deli. You know, what do you see? You don't like it?
Oh, well, the thing that happened when that happened, the reason why I worked at Safeways, that was when Dad was your 40, turning 40. We were both in our
40s. Oh my God, really?
It was. And doing that summer was very difficult. It was not an easy thing, but the purpose of it was to help with the dental work.
Yeah, because you guys are dental
orthodontics.
And orthodontics, no bueno.
yes. So going to work during that summertime was frustrating. I was getting tired, but it was also giving your older siblings responsibility at the home. But at the same time, we were kind of lacking there. And it was very challenging. And it was challenging on Dad as well with his job being at work at TMB. It was a lot of different things. This was before Grandma came to move
in. Oh, it was before Grandma came
to move in. Oh, yeah, okay. Definitely was. So she wasn't involved in that. And that was right after then, a couple of years afterwards, that she did move in.
But you have something, too, about, like, since we're, again, back on the topic of Grandma, like, there was something that you wrote and that you really wanted to share with everybody.
Oh,
so I'll let you go ahead and tell us where this thought came from and where you wrote it.
Well, I wrote a poem for my mom back in August of 2006, and it was at the time when I was volunteering. I volunteered for 10 summers at Camp Sunburst, which was for children and families who were living or had someone in the family living with the AIDS virus. And anyway, there was a lady there, her name was Harmony, one of the other people there, and she always helped people to write either a poem or make up a song in memory of people or whatever. And this was before my mom passed away. It was about, I think, 3 years before my mom passed away. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, so I decided that day, that summer, that I wanted to have a tribute for my mom because back then she was 91 or 92. So it goes like this. You were the one when my life began, always ready to hold my hand. You are the one who taught me to live. You taught me when and how to give. The cookie jar was always full. The clothes hung in the sun were made by your hands, your loving hands. Thank you, Mom, for being who you are. All these years, a mother, a nurse, a friend whose life has always been a labor of love. You are precious to me, and when your time has come, don't be afraid. I'll be the one holding your hand, holding your hand.
Aww.
And I was.
And you were.
Yeah.
And this when my grandma passed away. Oh, I know how special she was to you. And she was so special to all of us. And we have so many Grandma Jarrett memories with her living there. And she was a hoot. But it's really neat that you were able to get grandma home. And she was, she passed away in the home I grew up in. And you were by her side and you did hold her hand. And I unfortunately did not get to be there because it was right around the time Mark and I were getting married and we were in Europe when she passed away. But yeah, I mean, that's really, you know, special, the relationship that you guys had and how much she did help around the house and an impact that she had on not just your life and dad's life, but like all your children's lives. It was really.
And their friends.
Yeah.
Grandma Jarrett.
Yeah. We don't help her. She, you know, she did all of our laundry, even when it would give her a purpose and something to do. Like, but even if there was no laundry to do, my mom would like just grab a bunch of clothes. Remember? And like, she'd even like rewash clean clothes. And actually there's a funny story around the laundry with her. I'll never forget when I was in high school and I was playing volleyball and I used to wear those like spandex shorts for volleyball. Like that was the uniform. And I'll never forget. She was like really up in arms about my thong underwear. Like, what is this? this isn't even clothes. You know, they were so tiny and they went up my butt. Like, she was so great to have around.
And my response to that was, Mom, she's babysitting. She has her own money. If she wants to buy that, she can. But it wasn't even like a fourth of a yard of a material around that.
Well, you can't have lines in spandex.
I know that. She even did your cousin, LP. Uh-huh. He would bring the towels from his
gym.
And she would wash them for him because she needed, that was
and
a purpose.
And she would hang the clothes out to dry in the sun because living through the Great Depression, my grandma was very, very aware of not being wasteful. I mean, like if any light was on in the house and you were not in the room, like she would walk her ass out and be like, turn off the damn lights. And you're like, sorry, I just went to the bathroom during a commercial. But she was very resourceful, you know, and she would hang these clothes and towels out to dry. And I just always remember our towels, they would be like sandpaper when you got out of the shower.
And she always ironed. She ironed everybody's clothes. So that, I mean, that my
everything was creases. Fresh and crisp. And and correct me if I'm wrong, but when you come to my house, like you're not ironing and laying things out in the sun, but my mom always grabs a basket of laundry and she will fold them. And it's just something that I hope to carry on when I'm a grandmother, because it is really, really, really helpful and much appreciated because I literally hate laundry. It's my nemesis. But so I had a lot of people writing in questions, specifically moms to probably children, I'm assuming, like they have 2 to 3 children. And one of the most asked question was, how did you literally not lose your shit while raising 6 kids? Like, where does your patience come from?
Oh, I wasn't patient. Don't you remember me yelling? And in fact, if I could do differently, it would be, looking back, I wish I could have listened more and spoke less.
Oh.
In that sense of it. And really listening to especially when you kids became older. But at the same time, I guess my excuse was, you know, I had a teenager and then I had a toddler on my leg, you know, and in between there and trying to juggle it all around. But I wouldn't trade it for anything. But the thing is to listening and to hear what you were saying or what your siblings were saying at times, because it really was a different generation from what I was growing up. And I became my mom, hearing my mom say, I'm glad I'm done raising kids. I'm glad I'm not raising kids at this level now.
Isn't that interesting? Because now I'm sure you're probably really glad you're not raising kids during this level.
Yes, especially with all the screens and all that stuff. To me, it was difficult enough to raise you guys.
One Nintendo that we had. And you actually used an example today when, you know, Austin was like complaining about going outside. You're like, you remember what I used to do to you, Erica? And she was telling Austin, she goes, I used to, when I needed to get the house clean and I needed to get stuff done. And she really did this. She would literally lock us outside. And like, we were only allowed to come back for lunch. And then we're back outside again. And we did live in a really awesome neighborhood where there was a lot of neighborhood kids and, and that sort of thing. And I also remember when you used to throw a blanket over the TV because you were like, nope, no TV this week. And you just throw, because it was like a standalone TV. It wasn't like on our wall like it used to be, or it is now. But you used to throw a blanket over it and knew that was, you know, we weren't allowed to watch TV during those times. But So, but where you are a patient person, and maybe you weren't in those years, but I don't remember a lot of yelling or anything like that. If anything, I just remember fighting with my siblings more so than anything.
And that used to drive me crazy. You guys arguing and are teasing each other, but I guess that's all part of it. And the fortunate thing about that, looking back now, though, you did do the normal fussing and stuff, but you're all good friends now.
Yeah.
And
well, somebody asked that question. How did you encourage your children to have such a close bond and form a friendship with one another?
Well, I think because you depended upon each other in many ways.
Yeah.
The boys especially, I guess, that kind of thing. And you all, I don't know, I feel very fortunate. And I think dad is in that same place, that you all turned out to be really good human beings and you're all contributing to your community in one way or another. And the thing that's beautiful is that we've given you those roots and you've taken the wings, even though it was very hard to let go, especially believing that you become a young adult. You're at that young adult age and you're making your own decisions and your siblings as well. And having you walk your walk and the consequences that came with some of the choices, you know, and being forgiving to one another and realizing that. As the other part that probably something that you would even agree with me is I know I wanted to be in control. I wanted to be in control. I wanted you guys, in my mind, looking at life, this is the way I want. I want you to walk this way. And you guys, all of you are walking this different. And yet each one of you kids, each one of your siblings, you've all walked your own path. And the beauty of it today and that feeling of satisfaction and your heart full and grateful is that you've all married well.
Aww.
And I can't say how much that means to Dad and I to see that you and your siblings married your best friend, and you've each of you complement one another. And that's what it is letting go and trusting your journey that you're going
to
go on.
You only have so much control, and then you have to trust that what you did will implement into their adult years and in their marriage and stuff like that. But let me take a break really quick because the gardeners are here and the dog is barking. So hang tight. So let's talk about, and you can be totally honest when I ask you this question, what was it like raising me? What kind of child was I and teenager was I? And what one word best describes me?
The laugh. No, I just know when you were born, I was so excited to finally have a little girl after having three boys in a row. Scotia was the first, and then you came along after three boys. So that was very exciting because as a little girl, toddler, I think I dressed, changed you probably a couple times a day for a while there with all the little dresses. And grandma made you some beautiful smock dress, and I had some that were from Scotia as well. And then as you were like three, four, and five, and Matt was there, Matt came along, and so you watched out for him for me at times, you know, you played together and so forth. You did a lot of dolls and playing and, oh, what's that thing called? Color forms.
What?
They weren't paper dolls, but it was a color form thing that you used to do and drawing like dresses and stuff. You've always had a taste for fashion.
Oh, interesting.
You did. I know that about you, that was something that I noticed. And because you had older siblings and you wanted to be heard, your voice was kind of loud and you stood up for yourself and talked and yelled along with them. And so it was kind of chaotic at
and
times.
I cried every day.
Not really, but she says she does. But my one brother, I should say, would love to egg you on. But that was
you know how to get under my skin.
No, but now you're again.
Now we're so friends.
You outgrew at that. But then as on the neighborhood, my friends that lived on the neighborhood, they would say, "Oh, here comes the mayor of the block down the street." You loved riding your big wheel. Remember the big wheels? That and
I was a leader.
You were. You were a leader. And the little girl across the street at the time, Katie, would look over the window. She could barely look over her windowsill to see you and your big brothers outside playing at one time.
She was an only child, so she grew up across the street from six kids. So
in fact, she said a few times she was Katie Arnerich because the kids did come around. That was fun. Oh, that block that we lived on was a great block. There were more kids than there were adults on the block, I think. And and y'all played out there. And I think the other moms shut their doors too in the summer.
But, well, we knew we were in a safe place. Yeah. But then, so you're being very kind. But when it comes to my teenage years, would you have the same feedback as you did?
Well, you were a little challenging back then, but that was because you were very, I guess the one word was you were very independent and you had a mind of your own in that sense of it. Growing up as teenage, you were more, I want to say too, is drama. You like hanging out with boys more than the girls, I think.
Yes.
You'd get in arguments with your girlfriends or whatever and would cry easily. So you did. You went through emotional times there. And I have to be honest with you, I didn't experience that so much with Scotia.
Yeah, so, she was so much easier. Like, she didn't push the boundaries as much as I did.
She didn't question.
What she was told to do. She knew not to, like, get into trouble. And here I came, and I was like, I'm going to do this on my own. And that I did.
You did. And, yeah, you did. You had the drama a little bit.
It wasn't that dramatic. I wasn't involved in a ton of drama.
Well, no, everything was just bigger to life in your eyes at times with your friends and stuff. And you also hung out with your friends.
I was very, very, very social.
Oh, yeah. Yes, you
very
were
very social.
Hey, you loved having, well, I remember your eighth grade, you and even high school graduate, I think you had kids coming over to the house and stuff and so forth. And I think you liked being around the sports with the boys in high school. As you were in high school, they were, let me see, where were you when Tony was in high school? Where were you?
Oh, he graduated and then I came in as a freshman. I wasn't there when he was there.
You missed that. Yeah. That one year there.
I was involved in that when he was there. But
one of the positive, the positive thing was that you were independent. You were very responsible, I want to say, in the sense of you did not want to owe anybody money. And yet at that time, I kept thinking because she loved her clothes. She loved having name brand things of stuff. Going to the Dixie. Remember going to the Dixie Chicks? Didn't you go to
that? Yeah, I went to
the concert.
I went to the George Strait Music Festival with Jenna Conway.
Right,
and Jenna Doyle. I can't remember.
You did a lot of, and you were fortunate enough that you had some other friends that you even went to Hawaii with.
Yeah, with Kelly.
And that was something that, looking back, we didn't do those kind of things when there were six of you kids at that time. Our main trip vacation was going to Santa Cruz at the end of the summer after baseball season because it was always baseball season.
A lot of our trips revolved around baseball
and sports. But so I felt, again, here's that village that took you and your brothers as the same thing, that they were able to experience some activities or going to certain places that you wouldn't have otherwise had been able to do at that time in your life. So that was good. I would say too that you were, how do I want to say it? When Mark came into your life, that was really good. that was really, really good. And then I do know, if I remember right now, you can correct me if I'm wrong. I remember that you guys broke up for a while and his reason was that you had too much drama, but then you
I
got
was emotional,
back, emotional drama. That's what I meant. I guess that's what I want to mean by
I wouldn't have like fights with my friends or anything like that. I was dramatic myself. Yeah. I was, and still I am. I mean, like I'm animated. I'm, you know, like
quick.
I have a lot of emotions and I wear my heart on my sleeve. Like if I'm pissed, you know, I'm pissed. If I'm sad, you know, I'm sad. And it's been like that my whole life. So I think, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I probably did have some drama in high school with other friends and stuff, but I still like am really good friends with one of my girlfriends, Kelly, from high school. But I mean, I still like I left on good terms with all the girls, not necessarily the boys. But
yeah. But and I guess that's what I mean by drama was that you and your girlfriends would argue about stuff or wouldn't see eye to eye. But then you also went into cahoots and I know that there were some things that shenanigans that I didn't know at that time, but I found out later. I suspected some of it when you and Kelly got together and had some fun.
Some sneak out of the house.
Right. They would definitely disobey what we've told them to do or what I thought they were doing. But one of the things I remember, and I said it when each of your siblings got their license too, was that you just make sure you tell me if you're going somewhere, that's where you better be because I don't ever want to have somebody come to my door and say something happened at another street or whatever, you know, like out in San Sebastopol Pool or something like that. But the challenges then again, too, was that your age difference from where Scotia was, it was what, 10 years. and having you as a teenager and where she was.
Well, because cell phones were just introduced.
Yeah.
Pagers. And like technology was starting to really kind of start its way in. Thank God I did not have like social media like I do now when I was a teenager. I don't know how I would have handled that.
And I remember one time when we had a discussion and you said, "Mom, it's my job to rebel." And I go, "No, it isn't your job." And then when you turned 21, I go, "We made it through the teen years." And then we became, you know, you got through moving out and so forth. And again, me letting go, thinking, you know, you're not old enough to, you're not going to be mature. We're going to have to pay for things and stuff, you know, that kind of thing. But it didn't happen. You were always in, and you worked hard. You always have worked really hard and questioned some of it. Like when you decided to do this, you know, to go into Instagram, you know, whatever.
Yeah, that was a question that somebody had is, how do you feel when I first started the influencing thing? Were you confused, worried, disappointed?
I didn't know what the heck it was.
I don't even know if my mom still completely understands.
Like, no, and I don't think most of the my friends don't. Most of my friends don't even have Instagram, or they don't. And it's one of those things. Again, it's a generational difference.
Yes,
but I see that you are doing exactly what is a passion for you, and you love it. And I see that in you, and I see that same kind of passion, which I feel very grateful for. For your siblings and the job experiences that they are all in, you're doing that. How do I want to say, with what you're doing here? When I describe you to some of my friends that don't even know who you are, an influencer. Oh, she's selling all this stuff. I go, no, not really. I mean, she is, but she's not as for Instagram. Yeah. But you're really sharing who you are, and it would have been like if you were on a TV show. Are commercial maybe in some ways, but I always describe you as you're like a, maybe you won't know who this is, but a Lucille Ball, a funny person.
Lucille Ball is.
You might, but maybe some of your younger ones might not. And then along with Martha Stewart, that combination that I love how you like
a combo of Lucille Ball and Martha Stewart
put together. And here's Erica Altes, you know, that kind of thing. And I admire you and Mark, how you both work together as a team.
Oh, thank you.
I see that. And
would you say I am who, like what you see on Instagram, is that what you get in person?
Oh, yeah. You're authentic. You're real. And that's the other thing. I think that's so much better.
Yeah. My biggest goal is like when someone meets me out in public for the first time, they don't like walk away going, damn, she's way different than what I thought. Or, you know what I mean? Like, I hope that who I portray online is exactly who you get in person. I try really hard to just...
Who
I am and show up all the ways.
And well, and I admire you for that too, because you do show up some of the emotions of yours at different times. And being real, I think that's part of being in life, that if we all were real with one another and we really connected with people, you know, looking in each other's eyes, like looking at you right now, you're looking deep and you know the most important part of life is to be love and share that love, the joy.
Right.
That's
well, so you're a really good grandma, okay? And you're very hands-on, and you know, to be love, I mean, you definitely show love, not just to your own children, but to your grandchildren. And a lot of people want to know, like, what advice would you give to others on how to be a good grandma?
Show up.
Mm-hmm.
Show up, reach out. I think now as I have, again, know your technology somewhat, grandmas out there that aren't really familiar with, but like texting, I mean, that was something new to learn as it came out for me. Mm-hmm. And some of my friends where I live, they don't do that.
You reach out to the grandkids when they start to get their own cell phones.
I do. I send them cute jokes.
She sends like dad jokes to the kids. It's really cute.
They're cute. They are. And they love, and you know what's so cool is that that's a way to reach out. I tried that. One of the things that I feel really good about doing, or I've enjoyed doing it as much. I don't know if and I think they enjoy it too, is sending them funny cards for Halloween and Valentine's Day, those 2 days, you know, of the year. But they've started like 4 kids and now there's 16 of them sending cards in the mail. But I know that cards in the, you know, are a little
kids love mail.
They do.
Yeah.
They really do.
You know, you ran a daycare. You're really good with kids. And when my mom shows up I mean, holy shit. She brings like Toys R Us, not in the sense of toys for them. It's all games that they can play, like Penny Drop
and bring them home again.
Trouble. And like, it's new to the kids. And, you know, she really does, like, when she's here, she's very present with them. She'll read them books and, you know, talk about their interests, and you really connect with them. And no offense to Dad, but when they both show up, he might as well be chopped liver because they run right past him and they go to Mama Hallie. And he's always like, what the hell? You know, did you forget about me? What about me? And it's like, well, you know, she just, you really know how to connect with children very, very, very well. And it's definitely a talent of yours. So it's something that you should be proud
of. Did you realize what I majored in
college,
junior college? I have my
AA. It was a child development,
early childhood education. Yeah. And I worked at it back then. It was called nursery school. Uh-huh. Not crazy now. Nursery school, and then with the parks department, and then the daycare. But that, yeah, I love being around kids. You look at children and you see hope.
Yeah.
You see joy. You see instantaneous fun, enjoyment, and not worry about what the whole crazy world is doing, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what I'm seeing, the experience of seeing my grandchildren living a childhood that overall they're loved and they're cared for. And that's what you want. You want to share that joy and love with them where they are and experience the wonder of a ladybug on the ground or finding the kid, which one of
Austin.
Austin and Olivia as well, catching a lizard by I don't know how they
a
catch
piece of grass.
Yeah, they get it, they hook it, and they do that.
I know.
I used to catch and then your brothers too. Would take a plastic cup outside in the summertime and catch bees.
Yeah,
and, you know, that
bees only fly up.
Yeah, yeah. I guess that's why. Huh? I don't know.
But. That's a Mark a fact. Actually, it's a fun fact by Mark. But
yeah.
Well, so let's touch. You know, we were just talking about Dad and him showing up here, and you know, let's talk about your marriage with Dad. I don't always say that there's like one little secret to success, but what would you say, what would you contribute to the success of your marriage? Because you've been married for 50 years. Yeah. And you had six kids. You obviously had some financial stress while raising the six kids. So what are things that contributed to you being married for 50 years?
I think looking back at the beginning is connecting a commitment of marriage and realizing that we shared that together, that when we got married, it was going to be for life. We were going to really, divorce wasn't a part of it wasn't in our vocabulary. Coming from parents on both sides who had been married all their life, aunts and uncles and stuff, that was important. God became part, it was always been a part and invited into our marriage. So we depend upon our faith. It's taken a village to raise you, but the experience of it, with Dad having that loyalty, he works hard. He always has worked hard. And forgiveness, still having that fun part and enjoying each other. You know, we'd send notes to each other. I can remember when he was, you know, working at TMB and stuff, I would even send cards. And back then it was so much easier. I mean, not easier, but you'd get cards that just a love card, an encouraging card.
Oh, yeah, he would, like, I remember, like, I'd walk into their bathroom and I'd see a post-it that says, like, I love you and that sort of thing. It was always really endearing. You could see how my dad showed his love to my mom. And they would still, and you guys would still go on, like, maybe dates and, like, trips together and stuff. Like, I do remember, like, having to stay at, like, the Costello's house and stuff like that. And so I think that was a valuable lesson to, you know, show
time
us.
For yourself.
Yeah. You got to make time for each other.
Yes, we were very fortunate that I want to say that we would farm the kids out, three different families, the Jordans, the Escobars,
the Costellos,
the Costellos, yeah. Whoever.
We farm them out.
Well, two and two.
Yeah, you're not going to throw six kids on a household and be like, here, have all of them.
But then it was payback time. They would come our way too, you know, and that's what was so great about our community of where we were and where we lived. At that time here in Santa Rosa, it was safe and all.
Everybody knew my family. It was like ridiculous. That's why I always got in trouble in high school because everybody would catch me and tell my parents.
Well, we even knew the teachers, so that was kind of cool too.
Yeah. Every time I would enter high school, like, you know, for the new year, you know, my last name was Arnerich, so it was an A. And it would be like maybe second down the list of roll call. And they'd be like, Erica Arnrich. Oh, great. Another one. How many are you? How many are there left? You know, and I'm like, I'm the second to last, but I'm also the one that's going to give you the most run for your money. But no, they all knew my parents and stuff. So
well, the other part for that, too, is don't go to bed mad. You got to figure it out. You got to talk your feelings, even if it's going to. And I'm very easy. I wear my feelings right on my sleeve, too. I do say your dad's has been always very patient with me, which is, and he's been very forgiving, much, you know, that's been important. But then also, too, realizing the value of who we are. And I need him and he needs me. And realizing that, you know, he had a stroke at one time and he had heart surgery, and seeing where we are today, how fortunate, how we feel grateful for our health. And I have to say that, you know, you kids have helped us with that. Again, listening to you and listening to Allie, my daughter-in-law, and seeing good, making good health choices is how important it is that we continue to learn from other people's experiences too, and we're open to it. The one thing we agreed on when we first got married was we'll listen to advice, like from my parents or his parents, and then we'll decide what's always best for our family. You know, that's what's important, our little nucleus. And then now you guys are all out there and like, got to let go and let it go. You know?
How was that letting go of all six kids? There's a lot of parents right now who are about to be empty nesters or who are empty nesters. Was it hard, that transition of going from a really loud household to quiet?
Well, it didn't get quiet for a long time.
Because when Scotia left, I was only 8 years old. So
right. And then Matt lived with us, you know, into his 20s. But that was all good. But the thing is letting go and just trusting that you're going to do your own thing.
You have to become a different person. Like, you almost have to take on a different role, right? Like, especially once the kids come and play, like, show up and be the grandma. Like, I've learned so much from you, like how to be a good grandma, how to be present, how to be helpful. Like when you have a new baby, and showing up in ways of being helpful and not expecting everybody to cater to you at this point, like you still continue to mother in your way. And it's really appreciated.
I appreciate that. Well, the thing is to have boundaries and to let you all walk different walks and just trust where you're going, that you're doing what you need to do. Maybe it's not necessarily what I would have done or so forth or whatever. And you all are raising your kids your ways, your own ways, and within your family unit. And that's what's important, is to allow that to be. And if you ask me for advice, I'll give it to you. And I try to keep my boundaries and my mouth closed if I see things like, oh, I would never do that, but that's okay. And that's what I know for myself, you know? Yeah.
You're like, I've spread my wings from that role of being the parent, so I'll just sit back and let you take that on now.
Yeah, really, really.
Well, so there's a topic that we don't always see similar. How do you say that word?
Similar.
But isn't it similarly? Is that a word?
No, just similar.
That we don't always see in the same way, but I truly do have the utmost respect and admiration for when it comes to this topic. So let's talk about your relationship with God. You live a life of service, and you and Dad are the most, you know, devoted people to Christ that I personally know. So how did you get such a strong faith, and how do you lead such a life of service?
How did I get it?
I mean, the journals that you gave me, Mom, like the 3 years, there was like 3 years of like 2020, 2019, 2021, and 2023. 4 years, I could see your devotion to God and Christ. And I'm just, you know, when did that start? Who was your biggest influence? And how do you continue to maintain that sort of dedication to God?
Going back to my childhood, I was baptized as a cradle Catholic, as we call it. And my faith, growing up in a Catholic school and a Catholic high school that was walking distance around the block, that played a part there. The devotions and what the church gave to me, the faith gave to me, it just grew within myself. I saw my mom being the faithful person to in my family, with and my dad allowing her to raise us as Catholics. And he would come to some of the services on Christmas and New Year's, that kind of a thing.
He was that guy.
But that's okay. You know, we had our devotions growing up, and we shared that when Dad and I got married. We just, the power of prayer, and we've seen answered prayers. It's so important for us, and trusting and letting go and seeing again, knowing that there's something more than what we have here on earth. This is a pilgrimage for me. It's not my final home. And I really believe there's an eternal, there's another place beyond here, without a doubt, especially after people who have passed away. And I've experienced not their presence, but their presence in other ways of signs. I see signs. And so that has helped me, especially when grandma was dying. We had hospice there, and we had hospice just for 3 days. I mean, she came home right after you were married. I said, now we can bring grandma home, because it was just so much going on that summer from where she was. And she came home and she wanted to be home. And having hospice there and seeing that process of realizing the, it's like giving birth, you know, when
it's a transition.
It's a definite transition, and you don't know the exact minute or the time or whatever. In fact, the interesting thing with grandma was, I was saying goodbye to your brother, Bill, and Isaac was a toddler, maybe 2 years old, and he had come to see grandma that evening. And then he was leaving, and I went out to the car with him to say goodbye and thanking him for coming by. And I'm going back into the living room where grandma was, and your siblings, and I don't know where you were.
I was in Europe.
Oh, that's right. You had just gotten married. That's right. That weekend. And she died that Thursday. But just being there, and we're like, Mom, you're not there. And she was just so peaceful, and no wrinkles. The wrinkles all went away. She was just very relaxed. And it was like, wow. And then it just felt like the spirit, if you want to say, went. But the way hospice came in and just was very caring and
explained things
and just gently, she was being well taken care of. Whereas she was at the nursing home too, but it was just great. I was so grateful to bring her home.
Yeah.
And I've seen that with others. And after that, I decided to
Let's talk about that. I mean, you
volunteer.
Not everybody can say that they're capable of working for hospice. I mean, it takes a special person to, you have to have a special type of personality, a calm one, empathetic one.
Compassion.
Yeah. So what is it like working with hospice, and what has it been like? Have you ever had to like sit by someone's side who had no family when they've passed?
Absolutely. That's what we did at Memorial with the NODA program, NODA. And I believe they still have it here at the hospital. And that stands for Nobody Dies Alone. And it's just a very powerful moment or time that you're there. It's sacred time. And again, I think my faith helps me to get through that, because I know that it's not the end of their life. It's a new birth that they're going to. And I see that. I mean, I believe that. And so seeing that and talking with the people, talking with a client, if you want to call, so not knowing them per se, but knowing something about them, but holding somebody's hand, that compassion, and taking that last breath. I recall just 2 years ago, right where I live down the street, my friend's husband was passing, and I was with them at the time. And it's just, it's a special.
It doesn't need to be looked at as like scary.
No,
or,
I'm not. You know, no, it's not scary at all.
You're comfortable with death.
I am, because I know there's something more.
See, but like, I'm so afraid like one of my kids are going to die.
You got to trust. You have to have
hope.
You
didn't fear that any of us were going to die?
I was just worried. I don't know. Not necessarily, you know, but you didn't. And you haven't yet anyway, thank goodness. But fortunately, but we've had death in the family, and we have our good friends, our real close friends who've lost 2 children. And I know part of their journey has been their faith giving them continuing on. Your Auntie Pam.
Yeah.
You know,
I know. I kind of want to have her on my podcast. My aunt lost 2 husbands by the age of what, 42?
Probably that age. Yes. 10 was. I don't even know if they were married that long after.
I don't know.
But anyway, it wasn't too, you know, she lost 2 husbands.
2 husbands.
But unfortunately.
Speaking of not losing children to death.
Yeah.
But losing children. You did lose somebody at the mall.
Oh.
Do you want to share that story, Alice?
No, you went your way and you didn't go our way.
Was it during Christmas time? I can't remember.
Yes, it was
during Christmas time.
And we were parked.
You guys, she left. In her defense, she will say, well, I didn't technically leave the mall. Well,
we were going back to the car in the mall, downtown mall, Santa Rosa.
Yeah, at the plaza. I was in Sears.
We were all in Sears going. We were doing our, I think we went and took pictures for Santa or whatever. I don't know. That wasn't the year that you had pajamas on, but we did that one year.
Yes.
You know, so those traditions were fun. But anyway, going back to that part, you were probably like 4 or 5 because
I could speak in sentences.
And Matt was in a stroller and we were getting back, getting into the car and you weren't with us.
But you didn't even realize it.
Not until, well, you know what? We come out of the parking. We come out. We're right there. We're right outside the store. But we knew right away.
Well, Billy realized. My brother Billy was like, we don't have Erica.
Yeah, that's what he said. And so we told Billy and Scotia, you guys just stay put in the car. And we went back in looking for you. And there was a sales lady. We found you. You were right by the escalator with a sales lady. You were with the sales lady.
I had the wherewithal to go up and say, I can't find my parents.
Yeah. But don't call home because they're in the mall. They're here in the mall.
Yeah, they probably asked me for my phone number. And I was like, you're not going to find them at home. They're still here somewhere.
But it was, yeah, that was scary. And the other scary moment that you were, I don't think you remember that either, but it was right after we brought Matt home. You were like 2. You were just 2 years and 4 months when he was born. Just brought Matt home from the hospital, brand new baby in July. And all of a sudden I was upstairs and I heard this screeching, screaming. You were screaming. You were crying so hard. And I knew
it was like a sound of something bad happened.
Horrible. And I sent Billy out. Billy was down. I go, go see where your sister is. You had gone around the side of the house to go out in the front because your other brothers were out in front playing wiffle ball or something. And you wanted to go out to the side. But on the side of the house where the clothesline is was also our barbecue pit. And your dad was trying to be really Mr. Dad and get it cleaned up because we're going to be barbecuing. Well, he sprayed Easy Off oven cleaner on it and left it on there. But it looked foamy to you and you thought it was makeup and you took your finger and put it right under your eyelid and you had the biggest burn on your face, right just below on your cheek there. And you were screaming. In fact, I think some of this stuff got on Billy's arm as well. And it burned him.
Well, because I grabbed him. I have very faint memory of, only thing I remember from that experience was.
Grandpa?
No. Well, walking up and seeing Billy and looking up at him in like desperation and like reaching up for him. Like I remember that. And very faintly. And then I remember Grandpa putting me underneath the sink.
That really saved you from
my dad felt really, really bad about that situation.
Oh, it was awful.
I mean, literally, it was the day my mom brought my little brother home from the hospital.
And I couldn't go with, I didn't go with you to the hospital. And me and Grandma
A. We were worried about my eyes. And
yes, it was just awful, you know. And then you had this great big burn there. And I'm thinking people are, again, I should not worry about what other people think when they see me. Here's, can she not take care of her kids or whatever? But
no, she just has a ton of them.
And then I was so grateful there again, having gratitude that, my God, you could have gone blind.
Yeah.
You could have put it in your, you were
I trying. I could have ingested it.
See, again, you were trying to put makeup on your face. You know, I wanted to be pretty. We'd like to be pretty.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Oh,
that's so funny.
So, you know, we were touched on hospice and, you know, how you have lived a life of service. And there was, Alice gave me her journals, like I mentioned earlier. And
couple of them.
There was something that happened in one of your journals in 2021. And I was like, no, she did not. You found a homeless person.
Well, I didn't find him. Well, I saw
did
him.
Did you know I was going to talk about this?
No, not necessarily.
Okay.
No.
Oh, maybe I did prompt you with this, didn't I?
Yeah.
So she was in line at, where was it? Goodwill. And you took him to lunch?
Well, right there. It was in a shopping center there. What happened?
Did you like sit down and eat lunch with him?
Mm-hmm. He smelled. Well, yeah. I shouldn't say that way, but.
Well, it's okay.
Can we delete that?
It's okay. But it's honest.
He just was, I know.
Do you remember his name? It was one of your grandchildren's names.
George.
Yeah.
George, yes. That was a while ago. Yes, George. And I remember we had lunch, and I don't know the name of it. It was one of the...
So you tried to take him to Popeyes, but it was only drive-through. It was drive-through only.
Because it was the pandemic.
Oh, yeah, 2021. So then you found a Bill's Wingstop.
Yeah, it's right there across, in Elk Grove.
Yeah.
And we walked... I walked there. I mean, okay. The car was parked.
Yeah, you like didn't let him in your car with you.
I saw him as I drove into the Goodwill. He was on the side of the curb down in the parking lot. And then, I saw him there. But then I went into the Goodwill. And then when I came out, he was still there. And that's when I approached him and I said, are you hungry? And he said, yes. I said, well, you want to go to lunch over here? Because I don't particularly like giving money to give money. And I've done this a couple other times too at Costco.
You're just taking people to lunch?
Well, we went to McDonald's. I went and got somebody McDonald's because this kid was hungry too. He was on a bike, but he was like in his 20s or whatever. They're down and out. Yeah. They've had poor experiences and they're victims of different situations or whatever. So I encouraged him to take there's a place where you can get a bus pass to go to this place that I hadn't been before, but I heard about it was Loaves and Fishes in Sacramento. So I told him about that, where he could go now, whether he did or not. But having lunch with him, you know, you hear his story, and I don't really recall per se what it is, but there was always something, you know, he didn't have his license for something and he couldn't get a ticket to go on the bus anywhere or whatever. Yeah. So
he'd been traveling all over the U.S. is what you wrote in the journal.
Yeah. Is that what I wrote?
Yeah. You said that he'd been traveling the streets across the U.S. for many years. Your prayer for him and the many people that he accompanies in the homeless journey, that you hope that God will give them hope that one day he will encounter the living Jesus and follow him. It says that your eyes were open to the longing of a bed to sleep in and home with heat for warmth, the unconditional love that seems to be lost in George's life. Lord, give George a place of rest in your arms. So he was clearly hurting and struggling.
Yeah. And there's so many. Dad and I volunteer at Loaves and Fishes, which is an amazing, amazing organization in Sacramento. If anyone on here knows about it in Sacramento, where they feed the homeless 363 days out of the year. The only day they don't feed the homeless is on Thanksgiving Day, but every day they have lunch.
Of all the days to be closed on Thanksgiving Day,
and it's interesting because volunteering there, you find out that most of the people that are even volunteering had been on the street at one time.
So like giving back themselves.
Oh, they are.
Paying it forward.
And the people that come there, I get more from being there than what we give to them, but I'm just very fortunate that we have that. We've been able to experience that.
Right.
And the same thing going out to Occidental.
Yeah, they come once a month. You guys saw me share all my stories that we took the kids out there too, but they come once a month and they volunteer out in Occidental and they go out there the day before. The people come to collect the food and they set it all up. And then the next day the people come and they pass it out. So it's just, and we used to do that as kids. I remember going to the soup kitchen down in, I think, Railroad Square.
Mm-hmm.
And we would like serve people during the holidays and stuff like that. But you guys have always been leading by example. And I hope to follow in those footsteps with my children, because I do think it's important to give back to the people in need, especially people in your own community. It's easy to look past people and not see them as human, but they really are human. They just have a different story to tell and a different life experience. So I just think it's great that you've shown us and led by example to give back to people that have hardship going on in their life. So thank you for
that. Are.
I know.
And the one thing for anybody that encounters a homeless person, don't be afraid of them.
Yeah.
I know they look kind of can be fearful to see them or whatever.
Some of them can be on drugs and that can be a little scary.
Scary, yes.
But like other ones are mostly human and I think.
They're down and out. Ask them their name.
Yeah.
That tells them that they're being seen.
Yeah.
And so often we've overlooked them.
They're being seen as human beings.
Beings, exactly. Or we're judging them. And that's the last thing I want to do, because only by the grace of God, we're walking where we are, where we are today, and we're very fortunate.
I just try to look them in the eyes, especially, and just say hello. I don't always ask them their names, but because then where do you go with that comment?
My name is Allie. What can I help you with? What could you? And then that's where it goes. Are you hungry?
Yeah.
Or I'll pray for you.
Yeah.
And they usually say that God bless you anyway. And you know what? Blessings are important.
Yeah.
It's important to do that.
Well, just being seen as a human, like you said,
exactly.
Is super important. All right. So we're going to start wrapping things up. And I have two questions to ask you that you weren't prompt on.
Okay.
So the first one is how many Dickies do you own and how do you store them? Like, do you fold them and put them in your drawer or do you hang them on a hanger?
No, they're in a drawer.
They're in a drawer.
Yeah.
And how many do you have? Like, you have like one in every color, don't you?
Well, I have a white one. I have a red one. I have a black one. I have a gray one. I have a striped one.
So
I probably have about seven different ones.
How many layers are you wearing right now?
One, two, three.
Three. It's not bad. She's inside.
Yeah, I am inside.
She's always been cold. Like ever since I was a kid, like we'd go to San Francisco during Christmas time and I swear she'd be like dressed for the Arctic.
It's cold. But
she doesn't like to have her neck cold.
No. I don't like to have a draft on my neck. I just don't. And I have short hair. Now, if I had long hair, maybe it'd be different, but yeah. I have short hair now. So,
well, everybody, you know that you're like a trendsetter because there's like, they're like found on H&M and in Zara now. So way to go, mom. Yeah,
maybe bell bottoms will come back too.
Oh, well, they kind of are in.
Yeah. Isn't it funny how things do come back?
It all comes back. All right. Last question. And this is really important. I've been asking everybody this question before I sign off on season two. What is your favorite sandwich? What's it made up of?
Okay. It's sourdough bread.
Okay. Ooh, good choice.
Ham. Wait a minute. Okay. Ham with Swiss cheese or, wait a minute, and pear, and it goes in the panini, and you melt
in
it.
In the panini, you mean? Oh my God. You guys, this brings back the what happened last night when we were going out to dinner. Sorry to interrupt your sandwich conversation, but this really did happen last night and I have to talk about it. We were talking about the menu and I was like, oh my gosh, we're going to Jackson's. And I was like, they have this really good like dish of burrata. Like their burrata is amazing. She's like, burrata? What's that? I'm like, you don't know what burrata is? She goes, no, is it a fish? I'm like, no, mom, it's cheese. And she kept calling it burrata. Like, and then she like connected burrata with Prada, like the brand name. And she was all over the place. I'm like, oh my gosh. Okay. So you want a pear in there and you want Swiss cheese, ham on sourdough.
Melted.
Do you have any mayonnaise or mustard on that?
Oh yeah. You could put a little bit of mustard. You can put both on.
Mom, nobody likes a dry sandwich.
No, but the cheese melts.
Yeah, but Swiss cheese is like rubber.
Well, no, it's more like a Jack cheese.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry. I know. I said Swiss is the one with the holes. Yeah. No. It's the other kind.
Oh, okay, good. You just redeemed yourself a little bit because I was judging.
But with sliced pear on it, it's really good.
Yum. That's very fancy.
Well, I don't know. There's been pear with ham goes together or like a pizza.
So it's like a salty sweet, like seasoning sweet.
That could be. Oh. Yeah, that is.
Well, I think your sandwich is okay. I wouldn't classify it as the best sandwich ever, but that's, you know.
Can we end this on some of your Erica comments when you were like 1987 and 1988?
Oh, God. I was like 3 and 4 years old.
Yeah, you were 4. Yeah. She had her ear was clogged from a cold and Erica goes, Mommy, I can't talk out of my ear. Which was really kind of cool then. And then you woke up one morning, it was cold and frosty outside, and you looked out and you go, the grass is covered with white frosting. It was at Christmas time.
Oh.
And then Erica's nose was bleeding, and she said, Mommy, look, my nose is dripping. I just love those little things of it. The one other one that was really, that's always stood out with me and Mel was he used to play softball in the summertime, along with the boys playing their baseball. But back in that day, when she was younger, it was softball that he would play at Howarth Park.
Mm-hmm, I remember there.
And he was yelling down. He was late for something, and he yelled to me to get his cup for him to wear. And Erica pops in and goes, wait, Mommy, I'll go get him a cup out of the dishwasher. Well, no, not that cup. That'd be kind
different
of
kind of cup.
Yeah. But anyway.
Oh, my gosh. Well, thank you, Mom, Alice, for being on the podcast. Sorry for some of the interruptions that happened living in this household. You know, it's like a revolving door and stuff. But I love you. And I was really grateful that you were willing to be here on this platform sharing your story. I know she was a little nervous, you guys. But didn't she do good? Make sure you show her love in the comments. And I'm sure that I'll have you and hopefully maybe your best friend Margaret on here together. I need to get a whole nother setup for a third person, but I think that could be a really fun podcast.
Oh, wow. That would be funny. We've done funny things through the years.
You are cute.
She's very sweet. So. Oh,
well, I love
you. Thank you. Okay. All right. I love you too, dear.
See you guys next week. Bye.
All right, friends, that's all for today's episode of the Whiskey and Lace podcast. If you liked what you heard, please share the love and leave a review. And remember to join the Whiskey and Lace community by following me on TikTok and Instagram at Whiskey and Lace. And send me a DM to say hi and mention this episode. I'd love to meet you. See you next week.